This is the Bearcast, presented by Bird Cultian Ford. Bird Cultian Ford has been in Waco since 1936. Ford is the number one selling truck in Texas 43 years running. The Bearcast is also presented by WellMed Medical Management and USMD Health System Dallas. Here's Craig Smoke and Grayson Grundhaver.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the Bearcast here on Sikkim 365 Radio, Sikkim365.com. I'm Craig Smoke, Sikkim 365 Radio host, also team reporter, joined as always by Grayson Grundhaver, team recruiting reporter, also director of broadcasting for Sikkim365.com. And we are back from Media Days in Arlington last week. Spent a couple of days at AT&T Stadium to check out the Big 12 schools and their coaches and their player reps and just get thoughts galore on the upcoming season. And Grayson, now that we're back and we've got that behind us, now it's pretty much on to fall camp opening up and eventually the season here right around the corner as well. But how are we doing this week and your thoughts on being back?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of hype over the past weekend, I guess I would say, because of Big 12 Media Days. Got to see just kind of a lot of articles, a lot of written pieces, just kind of talking about expectations for various teams. And that's always fun to do. But I don't really know how much of it is fully accurate. You know, it's hard to really get a specific feel for how things are going to be without actually seeing a product on the field. But it was nice to see conversation, see coaches kind of talk about their team, their situations for the upcoming season. Always a lot of fun. But yeah, I'm ready for fall camp to get going. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Baylor seems to have pretty high expectations within the program. And August 6th, I believe, is when fall camp is set to kick off. So I'm excited to kind of see that unfold here in the next, I guess, 3 weeks.
Yeah, a little less than 3 weeks to go before that all gets underway. So I guess let's just talk about what Dave Aranda and company talked about. Obviously, a lot about, you know, just the off season. We've heard tons about that. The relationships being developed. You know, we've heard that probably more than anything else. How much are you expecting that to play a factor into this year? I mean, obviously, it'll play somewhat of a role, but I mean, how magnified do you think it could be?
It's huge, and I think everyone who was probably there covering Baylor recognized that all the players and Dave Aranda really specifically talked about how big it was for them to just start building these relationships that they weren't really able to build last year because of no spring ball and because of kind of a limited fall practice schedule as well. So I think that is really a key point to bring up. Terrell Bernard mentioned that, you know, Dave Aranda is a guy that he wants to aspire to be later in life. And that's just not something that would have been said if this was the same time last year. So it's clear that relationships have been formed, and I just think this is a very together and cohesive team, and anytime that happens, I think you see great chemistry that starts to build. I mean, that's just a recipe for success, and I think that was probably one of the bigger things of note that we saw, I think, on the Baylor side of things.
Yeah, so that's all seemed to be patched up. Meanwhile, one of the biggest things that I think people were kind of like maybe nervous about coming out of it was after he did his introductory press conference, he touched on the quarterbacks, and he touched on particularly the negatives the quarterbacks currently have, or the weaknesses, I should say, the things they need to work on, however you want to phrase it. And he did not, you know, have any lack of – I don't even call it criticism because that just sounds like it's too negative, but did not have any lack of pointers for this group of quarterbacks. I mean, he pretty much laid it out there. He did not mention Kyren Drones, but he did mention Blake Shapen. He mentioned Jacob Zeno. He mentioned Gary Bohannon and things they all need to work on. For Shapen, it sounded more or less just like, don't let mistakes beat you twice. You know, clear that last play or whatever and then move on along. For Zeno, got to work on the deep ball, got to work on quite a few things, and Gary maybe had the longest list of all as far as, you know, has got to work on this and that and this and the other as far as his passing goes. So how are you feeling about the quarterback spot coming out of this past week, and did you expect to have any sort of more Clarification, are you surprised that maybe it's even foggier than even before, or do you see it differently as far as the quarterback spot goes?
Yeah, so first of all, not surprised at all that Kyren Drones was not on this list. We've talked about this a lot. He's a true freshman, and I think everyone wants to have these expectations that a true freshman is going to come in and be the guy right away because they saw Trevor Lawrence do it or saw Spencer Rattler, Kyler Murray, guys who have done in the past. But that just simply was not the case for Kyren Drones, and that's okay. He's going to be a very talented player moving forward for Baylor, but not this year. Now, as far as the other three, they talked about just a multitude of things, and I just want to reiterate, I think that some of these things translate to the other quarterbacks in the room as well. So I don't think Dave Aranda was specifically, these are the only things they need to work on, period. I don't think that's real, or these are the only things they're good at, period. I don't think that was the situation. So Blake Shapen, I think this is just a point where he's a young guy. He's got a lot of learning to do from a on-the-field game manager perspective and being able to, like you said, create after mistakes. How do you respond after those? And I think that's an area where that takes maturity, and that will come as time progresses. But he was on the QB depth chart. There was an or between all three of these guys. So, again, I don't expect Blake Shapen to be the starter game one. I do think it'll be Zeno or Gary. So, let's move on to those two guys. Jacob, accuracy with the long ball. We know he's got the arm. Everyone's seen the arm, the flashes of the arm strength. But can you be accurate when you're delivering those balls deep? And can you not turn the ball over when you're throwing a deep ball as well, which we saw in the spring game? Those are things that he definitely has to work on. The other part about it was the leadership aspect. And I think this is one of those things coming into the offseason that I think people kind of took for granted with Gary, because this is an area that Gary has excelled at since day one, is being a leader of the team, a guy who's very assertive in that role. And I think that's an area they want to see Jacob take a big step in to really claim that number one spot. He needs to be the leader of all the guys on this roster. And obviously, Dave Aranda thinks he's not quite there yet. Now, as far as Gary goes, you mentioned long list, a lot of it, quick rhythm passing game, the ability to drop back in the passing game. Those are some areas he needs to work on. And then making proper reads. And I think that's something we've talked about for him for a long time. We saw it in his very first spring game, the inability to make reads. And so I'm curious if, as time progresses through fall ball, if he can really respond to that and really start going from his first read, moving to his second, to his third, making progressions. Obviously, that's where he needs to work on. But we all know what he can do with his legs, and that wasn't touched on by Dave Aranda at all.
Yeah, so having heard all that, what do you think the pecking order looks like at this point?
I truly think it's a 1A, 1B with Jacob and Gary right now. I don't even know who I would put as the 1A. We've talked about this for a long time. I still think that Jacob will end up being the guy, but I also saw in the spring game, Gary have a great spring game and really push himself into the fold even more than he was during spring ball. So I really think this is a situation where they're going to be battling all through fall. I think it's going to be a very intriguing race, but I do think it will be one of those two guys kind of going head-to-head, getting the one and two reps throughout fall ball. I will mention Dave Aranda said during the breakout session that he would like to have a quarterback for that first game, as in he does not want to sub a guy in and out. So I don't think we're going to see, oh, let's go find out who the better quarterback is game one. No, they want to go find out who the better quarterback is during fall camp and play that guy week one, which is something you've brought up in the past. And I totally agree with you on this. It allows that guy to try to get into a rhythm and really establish himself as the quarterback of this football team without having to look over his shoulder, at least in game one.
Any concern that you have so many guys, you don't have a guy?
There has to be, right?
Yeah.
I mean, none of these guys are proven. Let's be honest. I mean, everyone wants to say that I don't think you can really take away anything from any of these guys' previous performances other than Gary can run the football and Jacob can make tough throws occasionally. That's about all we know based on what we've seen in the past of these guys playing. And so I do think that there are concerns with that. And I think that that's where you start to look, okay, if the season progresses and no one really establishes themselves or they're not having any success, maybe they do turn to Kyren Drones and give him a chance later in the year. I really hope that doesn't happen, because that probably means that Baylor is really struggling this year. If they're really having issues at quarterback, they're probably not going to be very good at the beginning of the season. And as we know, that schedule gets even harder as the end of the season approaches.
Yeah, I think, so much time focused on the O-line, and I do think the O-line is going to be a work in progress, although I think they'll be okay. But, yeah, I mean, I wonder about the quarterback spot and the fact that we're this deep into the ball game, and, you know, it doesn't seem like – I mean, I understand they haven't been practicing here these last couple months, but, you know, you expected maybe by the end of spring ball somebody would have grabbed that job. Nobody appeared to even come close to grabbing it. And, you know, these months later, you know, you're listening to Dave Aranda talk about these quarterbacks, and it's just like, man, like, yeah, I know there's positives for all of them too, but it's just, it's curious to kind of see how this plays out with the quarterback spot.
Yeah, I do think that there is gamesmanship that has to be in these situations as well. They really need both Gary and Jacob to be on this roster. You know what I mean? They need both of them to be battling with each other and competing, because they need both to get better. I mean, they really do. And I think when quarterbacks especially get comfortable, that's when you have to worry. And I think it's actually a really smart approach that they're keeping all three of these guys on their toes and making sure that, hey, you know, y'all have to earn this. And we're going to make sure that we get the best product on the field for game one by pushing y'all throughout fall ball. So, I mean, I could honestly see this taking up all the way until the game against Texas State. Maybe that first depth chart that comes out, we get some clarity. Hopefully there's not that dreaded or going into that game, because that, I mean, no one wants to see that anymore. There were too many of it on the first depth chart.
Well, we did get a depth chart, and there were, you know, not too many surprises, I don't think, that were on there. There was, you know, officially you saw the move of Garmin Randolph to the outside linebacker spot from D end. So they're going to have a big old outside linebacker who was, you know, formerly putting his hand down in the ground. So Joey McGuire talked a little bit about that yesterday, just the fact that Garmin had made that move. He seems to have a pretty nice little group of talent in his room with, you know, Victor Obi and Tyrone Brown, and now you got Garmin Randolph in there, and several others. So,
and Ashton Logan, who's the starter right now.
Yeah, and Ashton Logan being a starter on the depth chart was, you know, one of the things that, you know, potentially stood out to people. I mean, it did to me, even though he played a bunch of games last year. Did you have any thoughts that jumped out at you from the depth chart release last week?
Yeah, so I think Garmin Randolph is actually going to be playing a very similar role to what William Bradley King did a year ago. And I know that Garmin has more athleticism as far as being a true outside linebacker, but I think specifically he's going to be used to rush the quarterback. I think it's very clear that he has a knack for that and a talent for that. And that position needs a guy like that, because they got young guys with, like you mentioned, Anthony Nyanwu and Tyrone Brown and Victor Obi, young, unproven guys who they're still trying to figure out exactly what they're going to be at this level. But I think you also look at kind of what Garmin can bring. You know he can pass rush. And I think that they're trying to figure out, okay, so if we play Ashton Logan on first and second down, are we really going to play him on third down to rush the passer? Probably not. That just hasn't been something that Ashton Logan has really thrived at during his time at Baylor. So I think they're trying to find guys who can maybe cycle in and play the jack position, especially on third downs and maybe some early down work as well to get after the quarterback. I also think Garmin will play some defensive end. I do think he'll have to rotate some just to give them a true pass rusher, because that's a big concern of mine. You look at their roster, if Gabe Hall and TJ Franklin are not going to be starters, you have a lot of concerns about getting after the quarterback, at least I do. So that was definitely something that stood out. Outside of that, on defense, I wasn't really shocked by anything. It seems like they're pretty much in a good position. I think that AJ McCarty moving up the depth chart and being on the second string cornerbacks was really interesting. Lorando Johnson, second string as well. And of course, Will Williams. I think that's all good news for Baylor moving forward.
Yeah, I do too. I think the defense is pretty much, set the tables, you know, there. They just need to bring the meal out, and that's the season starting up. Offensively, not really much in the way of surprises. Offensive line looks like it's still working its way out and trying to figure out exactly what that will look like at this point. But, I mean, as we know, all the skill spots are pretty much sewed up. I mean, we know who all is there, and it'll just be a matter of, okay, does this guy just happen to start game one versus this guy, and, you know, like at the tight end spot or something where that could rotate depending on what they're doing. But, I mean, offensively, it seems like they're pretty much complete. It's just a matter of letting those O-linemen settle in at this point.
Yeah, offensive line, there's a lot of oars in the quarterback position. A whole lot of oars at those positions. But I think wide receiver, you've seen the group emerge. There are six names that have really emerged from that group. Tyquan Thornton and R.J. Sneed were kind of the givens, I think. Drew Estrada to a certain extent as well. But Josh Fleeks continuing to battle for that starting third wide receiver spot. And then Jackson Gleason and Jalen Ellis were the other two names on the depth chart, which is not surprising at all. But I think as we move into fall camp, I'm very excited to see what Hal Presley and Gibson do. I'm very excited to see what they're able to do coming up this fall camp. I really think that those two guys have an opportunity to really move up the depth chart and really try to put their claim on possibly playing a bit more. So, yeah, Hal Presley, Javon Gibson, I'm keeping an eye on them to see if they can come in and really disrupt the depth chart a little bit.
So, we've got the depth chart release, which, of course, will change here and there between now and the start of the season. What did you think of Dave Aranda? He seemed to be in, you know, quite the good mood to be there. His first media days, he had a big smile on his face and seemed to really handle all the interviews well. He seemed comfortable, and, you know, that's to be expected. Once you do something long enough, it just becomes like old hat. He's been in the coach's chair now for a year, so he's settled in, and I don't know. He seems to have a good vibe going on headed into this season.
Yeah, I was excited to hear from him, and I agree. He just seemed to have this kind of confidence and a little bit of a swagger about him, honestly, mm-hmm. when he was at Big 12 Media Days. I know a lot of people have talked about the fact that he's very open and honest about his football team, and also open and honest about the X's and O's that his football team's trying to install. And so I think people appreciate that when they get that kind of honesty. I know Max Olson mentioned it. I think some of the SiriusXM guys also mentioned that they appreciate that, because you don't get that kind of insight very much from other Big 12 coaches. So I was happy to see that, happy to see his confidence. I think he has truly made himself the face of the Baylor football program. And it took time. To be honest, I'm not sure if he was ever at that point last year. But I think after Big 12 Media Days, he's officially solidified that. And I was really, I think that he just had a great performance. And just really, I think overall, anyone who's a Baylor fan has to be really happy with the direction he's trying to take this program, the optimism, and like I said, just overall confidence that he showed. I think it's really a big thing for this team going forward.
Yeah, he was impressive. He did a really good job, and I know there were a lot of people who didn't know quite what to expect, but I think that they walked away impressed by Dave Aranda when it was all said and done, and that was, you know, the impression I certainly got and what I heard as well. So, yeah, nice little debut for him at Big 12 Media Days, even though it's his second year at the helm for Baylor. You know, Connor Galvin spoke, obviously Terrell Bernard. What were some things maybe else that we haven't touched on that you just picked up along the way at Media Days? I've kind of said everything that I've seen or we've talked about most everything on the show the last 3 days, but what am I missing maybe that caught your attention while we were in Dallas?
Well, I have a couple things, but let's just start with one that I think we should definitely talk a little bit about, and that's Siaki Ika mm-hmm. and just kind of the impact that he's going to have on this defense. I think we've known this since he transferred, how big of an impact he could have, but I think just hearing more and more about it just kind of speaks to exactly what he brings to this football team and to this program. I mean, this is a guy who's an absolute game changer for them at the nose tackle position. Joey McGuire mentioned that he thinks he's the best Big 12 defensive lineman. That was a huge statement. There are some really good defensive linemen in this conference, and he thinks Ika is the guy for that. If he does achieve that, I mean, this Baylor defense is going to be absolutely scary, because he gives them an anchor. He allows those really good linebackers with Dylan Doyle, Terrell Bernard, and Jalen Petrie to get into the backfield and just make plays, really not disrupted. And I think that's what Dave Aranda mentioned, and it's kind of what Terrell Bernard mentioned, that he just makes life easier for them by keeping guys off of them. And that's what Bravion Roy did in 2019. So if he can really do that, whew. I mean, they're going to be really, really good on defense.
Yeah, no, they have all the makings to be a really good defense. You know, Ika is going to need some help around him, though. He can't be tasked to do it all himself of like, oh, we got this guy now. We're short up on the offense or on the defensive line. And no, you need Chidi, you need Solon, you need like whoever to be able to come up and make some plays as well. So hopefully he gives them those opportunities and they take advantage of those opportunities and help clean up the mess. So yeah, Ika was definitely a big talking point coming out of media days. And, you know, that was kind of it, actually. I mean, a lot of it was, I know for me, a lot of it was looking around at other teams and just kind of seeing what the talk was. Everybody, but I'd say Kansas seems to be optimistic about this upcoming season. Anything else for you?
Yeah, I mean, I felt like after going to media days, you saw Oklahoma and Iowa State really, in my opinion, solidify themselves as the top two teams. It just seems like they have this swagger about them that they're going to be really, really good. And that's not really surprising, but I did think there were some other teams that stood out, and just kind of my takeaways that I came up with. I know that we talked about some of those dark horse teams, and I had Baylor inside the top six in the conference with Oklahoma State and TCU right there with them, and I think those are the three through five. I think those are three through five, with Texas being six. It just seems to me like Texas does have some time before they're going to reach their eventual landing spot with Sarkisian. I do think they'll be pretty good eventually, but I think this year's going to be tough. First year, it's always tough on a head coach, and I just think they do have some weaknesses that they still need to address. So I think Baylor, Oklahoma State, and TCU really moved up for me inside the top five in the Big 12. I think they're going to be really, really good, and I was excited to hear from their coaches. I think they did a really nice job, and like you mentioned, Kansas – not really excited about their season, but Texas Tech, actually, Matt Wells seems pretty excited about the veteran unit that he's bringing back. So we'll see if he can do anything with it and if their quarterback, Tyler Shug, can do anything. But they did have some excitement about them, which is always nice to see, I think, for any fan base that's watching Texas Tech and is a fan.
Yeah, I mean, they were big at hyping up their defense, and they were fine last year. But, I mean, it wasn't like they were the, you know... the Wreck'em crew or anything. I mean, they were definitely not that. I they've got a lot of experience, especially at linebacker. But, yeah, I don't know just yet about them. So, you know, it's a crapshoot coming out. I mean, definitely Oklahoma and Iowa State right there. And, you know, I think Texas will be pretty good. I think TCU will be pretty good. I think Oklahoma State will be pretty good. So it'll be interesting. You kind of wonder where – Baylor's going to get their wins in. I still maintain the same ones I did before the season. I think they can beat Texas Tech and Kansas, but they got to win their non-conference games. That's for dadgum sure. And they're going to have to find a couple wins that maybe don't look likely right now. And I don't know where those are coming from, but, you know, a lot of it will depend on who's at quarterback and who that looks like and what that looks like and how long that lasts. And, you know, I'm interested to see it. I'm interested for fall camp to get started up to learn a little bit more about this Baylor team, because I just have more questions now coming out of media days. I mean, there's a lot of answers, but now the questions that there are bigger questions, because the season is almost here and you don't have a quarterback yet and your O-line is still kind of up in the air and you got some things to answer. So, yeah, I was very impressed with Sarkisian. I mean, he's hard not to listen to and then walk away being impressed by. I think he, you know, if given the free rein there, like he's apparently going to have, I think he'll definitely get that program in order and heading in the right direction. And not to say they're not already, because Herman was a goof, but they still won more than they lost. I mean, so it's not those like Sarkisian's coming in and taking over a 5-win team. So a couple moves and it might not take them long. So, I mean, yeah, you just look across the board. Riley was definitely very confident in his team. I mean, that's media days for you. Everybody's feeling good about their team on media days, except for Lance Leopold, who didn't even show up to Arlington because of a bus thing or whatever that was, a plane issue.
Yeah,
that was convenient.
Smart.
That was
smart,
convenient.
Smart to not be there for that. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think it's interesting that Texas has a quarterback battle. I think that was something that really stuck out to me, because I think everyone assumed after the Alamo Bowl that Casey Thompson was just going to be the guy, but that has simply not been the case. He's been pushed by Hudson Card. It was kind of an interesting situation, very similar to Baylor a little bit. I know they're not the same grade level or anything like that, but It seemed like Casey Thompson really had the leg up all spring, and then Hudson Card had a very good spring game and kind of jumped himself right back into the race. And that's kind of similar to what happened with Baylor a little bit. I think everyone was kind of writing off Gary for some reason. Then spring game happened, and now he's right back in it. And I think it's just interesting because you mentioned how Baylor has uncertainty at the quarterback position. Well, Texas kind of does too, mm-hmm. a little bit.
Yeah, they do. They do. So that'll be interesting to follow. And they didn't have, you know, either one of those guys there as a rep that would have kind of tipped their hand. And I guess they're unsure right now. You know, so they're one of a couple schools that are trying to figure out the quarterback situation, but at least have options. That's the good news is at least there's options and not one of those of like, I don't think we have a guy and it's a month out of the season. But trying to think, was there any more buzz on anything in particular out of media days? Not that I can recall at the moment off the top of my head.
I think the biggest riser in the conference from media days, which if you can really be a riser, just kind of, momentum, I would say, is actually Oklahoma State.
Yeah,
sneakily,
probably.
I just think they've gone under the radar, and it's like they're kind of getting disrespected a little bit, I'm not going to lie, from the outside media. And they're probably going to be pretty good. And I just found that to be interesting. They had a lot of confidence about them. I mean, Spencer Sanders, Malcolm Rodriguez were ultra confident about what they were going to do this season. And I found that to be very interesting. I know Mike Gundy had some funny comments about Spencer Sanders a little bit and how he's kind of had to go through this developmental curve. And we've seen that. He's cost them some games, no doubt about it. But I do think that at the end of the day, he's going to be a pretty solid quarterback. And I think he's going to be pretty good this year. And I really, Oklahoma State, they always go under the radar for some reason, then somehow Mike Gundy will get them to 10 wins, and I think that might just be the case this year.
I mean, if they win 10 games, and they're flirting with the Big 12 title, so something's going to have to give because you're not going to have Iowa State, Oklahoma, you know, and then potentially TCU or Texas or whoever jumps up and maybe has – I mean, you're not going to have four 10-win teams. You're not going to have three 10-win teams, so something's got to give, yeah.
You could have three. With a bowl game and
yeah,
a
with a bowl game and a playoff
you can find a way to get to 10.
Yeah,
potentially
you can, but basically that means that the three of you are beating everybody else and nobody else is really jumping up
to
and
an
winning
extent,
any
yeah.
games. Yeah, so like that would be unlikely, let's mm-hmm. say. But so if you have potentially three 10-win teams, and we're not even counting TCU or Texas into them, like that's what I'm saying. Well, something's got to
go. I mean, they could go 9-3, 6-3 in conference. That's quite a few losses, and then win their bowl game. I mean, they could ease. I mean, that.
I mean
that's
if, a you lot wanna, of if you want to, if you want to believe that there's going to be like three 9-10-win teams in the Big 12, not counting Texas or TCU, then by all means, I'm just saying that's possible, but I'm not banking on it, nor thinking that it's the likelihood. Is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know.
It'll be interesting to see for sure. And I think I'm leaning more towards there being a bunch of 8-win teams than probably a third. Sure. But I'm just saying, I think likelihood, it seems like Oklahoma State has just kind of that edge to them where it could happen. Again, not anticipating they're going to go 10-2 during the season, but just saying, I think they might be better than I think people are expecting.
Yeah, definitely possible. So Big 12 media days, anything else before we move on?
I wouldn't say a whole lot other than that. I think from the Baylor end, I just want to continue to say they just had a lot of confidence. I think Connor Galvin seems really happy with Eric Mateos mm-hmm. coming into the fold. That was a big conversation as well, talking about the offensive line, how it's really gotten more simple but also more violent. And they're just very – I think he's just excited for it. And he mentioned we're sprinting everywhere. That's mm-hmm. just what it is. When the ball snapped, we're sprinting. And that just – is something, I guess, different than what they had in the previous staff. And obviously, it's a different offense. Wide zone, they have to continue moving. And that's something that's been preached by Eric Mateos and Connor Galvin. He seems to be pretty excited about the guys that they do have. I personally need to see it before I really can know. But I will say it seems like Connor Galvin likes the spot that they're in and thinks that there are, you know, eight guys who can really, really play in that offensive line room.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you this much. Just talking to Terrell and Connor, their Big 12 media days, they're fired up. Yeah, no, they definitely have a lot of confidence. They're definitely excited to be back. They definitely are getting along with the staff and feeling good about, you know, what the team has done this offseason. So if you're wondering how the players feel, and it was genuine, too. It wasn't one of those, Look, I've seen plenty of Baylor teams that have gone through the motions at these events because they kind of have to, because the team stinks and they just got to put on a brave face, or they're unhappy and they just got to, you know, smile through it. That wasn't the case here. There's a couple guys who really seem to be excited about this season and really fired up for what this team could potentially do. So that was a definite positive takeaway from Media Days, was just the atmosphere and the vibe around the players and coaches. It was genuine, and it was exciting if you're a Baylor fan to kind of see how happy they were to be there.
Yeah, it was. They were happy, and I think they're also just relieved to move on from last year. Let's be honest. Last year was a really tough year for everyone involved, and you can see that it had a big effect on Dave Aranda, Connor Galvin, and Terrell Bernard. They were not happy about what happened last year. That was way below the expectations. And I know Terrell Bernard, especially because he was hurt, there was nothing he could do about it. And now to see him 100% again and just really ready to take that step as a leader and as a player, I think it's very intriguing. I think if you're one of those people that's thinking Baylor, if you're taking the under, you know, six games this year, I'd be very careful. I think this Baylor team can far exceed expectations for the 2021 season.
Yeah, it's going to be funny because, you know, some fan bases out there are definitely a little too cocky right now. Yeah. And we don't know which ones those are, but there's definitely some fans that are feeling themselves from some school, and it could be Baylor. I don't think it is, because I think, you know, obviously two wins last year. I think, you know, you have every reason to believe you're going to be a better team this year. But everybody seems to think they're going to be better this year. So, like, except for Kansas. And even then, I didn't listen to any of their media sessions. No point in it. But I'm sure they feel like they're going to, you know, win two games this year or something. I don't know. But, yeah, it's a conference that's, you know, brimming with confidence right now. Pretty much everybody there felt like, you know, it's good to be back. But, hey, we're going to be the ones to win it all this year. We're the underdog, or we should be the favorites, or whatever the case may be. Just a lot of confidence. But, hey, that's the preseason for you, like we've been saying. So that was the case for certain with Bernard and also with Galvin and with Aranda. The contingent did a really good job out there in Arlington. Trying to think if there's anything else. You got anything football-wise?
No, I think Media Days, that was pretty, yeah. We pretty much hit it all.
I mean, yeah, it's a good little event. I had fun. It was informative, but we got a lot of information up on the website if you're still wanting to dig through that, all the audio and things like that. And it was a good time. So now it's turn the page and get ready for fall practices and get ready for other sports and other events and things of that nature as well. And, well, we have the Olympics coming up here and less than 2 weeks now at this point out in Tokyo, Japan, and a couple more Baylor Olympians are going to be in the mix. A couple of athletes that were not on the original four that we had known about that were going to be heading to Tokyo, which was Trayvon Bromell, of course, who's a favorite to potentially win gold or at least medal out in Tokyo in track and field. Casey Lightfoot headed to Tokyo. Will London will be an alternate from Waco High, and of course Baylor as well. He will be out there in Tokyo, and we just had him in studio in this very chair over to my left. He was hanging out here before, you know, leaving in a few days to head off to Japan. And we also knew about Brittany Griner with women's basketball. But now Epe Udo has been added to the Nigerian Olympic basketball team. So Epe is going to be going to Japan, and also John Pierce, former Baylor men's tennis player, a double standout. He will be heading to Tokyo to play for his native Australia in men's tennis. So there you go. Bromell, Lightfoot, London, Griner, Udo, and Pierce, six Olympians for Baylor athletics. I don't know what the record is or what the normal total is, but six seems like more than I've ever seen and seems like a pretty healthy number as well.
Yeah, great achievement, and especially when you look at it and say, man, there are a few people on this list who could win gold medal. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking Trayvon Bromell, I mean, right now is the favorite. That's going to be really interesting because obviously the 100 meter is a very tough event to win. I think Will London is probably in the 4x4 with Team USA, they're probably up there for contention as well. And, of course, Brittany Griner with Team USA, they should be able to win for women's basketball potentially. They've gotten off to a slow start. But it's going to be really cool to watch. And, I mean, to see this many Baylor athletes on that stage when it has – you know, they missed last year. So now this is going to be a really highly anticipated Olympics, in my opinion. I know it is for me at least.
Yeah, I don't know this, and I'm – not trying to derail here, but are they going to just go every 4 years from now on from this year?
It's a great question. I do not know the answer to that.
I've been wondering about that.
It should technically be 2024, right, the next one? But if you go back in line, it'd be 2025.
So it's been even numbers, and now it's been knocked off its axis. Ooh. So I wonder if it's, now we're going to have the 2025 Olympics and the 2029 Olympics.
Yeah, I don't like that as much. I bet they do 2024. I'm going to just take a guess.
Yeah, I don't know. That's just something I was wondering about because, you know, it's just kind of weird if they start doing the odd numbered years. But with that delay, I don't know how else they would change that. So, yeah, that'll be interesting. Maybe if we have an Olympics in 3 years from now or if it remains the four.
I just got confirmation from Jack that it's 2024. So, thank you, Jack.
So, they're staying no matter what? Okay.
So, that's good
to know. That makes sense, yeah. So year less of training for some people, but no, that's what I would have done. I would have stayed with the even numbered years as well. So, okay, cool to know that. All right, elsewhere, Lady Bears have finalized their coaching staff and an interesting hire to round out the staff. Remember when Smokey announced this and I didn't really know what to say because so much of the description of this person was not really to do with basketball. It was like social media and all this other jazz and, so I was commenting on the hire, and I'm like, well, I don't really know anything about this lady, and the resume is really impressive, but I don't know what to say because, I mean, all this outside stuff sounds good in the era of name, image, likeness, which I could see as being a big driving factor here. But there's also the basketball side, too, and she does have the basketball side. But Chloe Pavlik is the newest Baylor women's basketball assistant coach. She was announced by Nikki Collin a little less than a week ago, and she completes the first ever coaching staff under Nikki Collin. So Chloe Pavlik now in the mix, and a lot in her little bio about, you know, just what success she's had in social media. She's had content on all sorts of different platforms. She was a content creator for Facebook. She's helped create funds like the Black Creator Fund, We the Culture. She's been involved in script writing, like all sorts of things that are just totally non-basketball. But there's also some basketball in there as well. As I said, being at UConn as a graduate assistant, for example, being at Maryland as a player as well. So, what are your thoughts? Very interesting hire, and almost like description-wise, almost outside of the box in a way by Nikki Collin.
Yeah, very outside the box, and I actually love this hire because I think you have to adapt with the changing times and the changing culture and the changing in recruiting. And I think that's where Chloe is really going to have the biggest impact is the recruiting side of things. And I think Baylor, the Lady Bears, could use that. I think that she's going to really do a nice job elevating their recruiting ability. She obviously knows basketball, played basketball, so I'm excited about that part, but I also am excited just at the simple fact that look at what she has done outside of basketball. Look how accomplished she is just kind of as a influencer and as just someone who I think people get to see a whole lot of and learn a lot from just from the different ventures that she's done. It's very impressive, and I do believe that this is an outstanding hire, very outside the box, but I think it speaks volumes that this is the last hire for Nikki Collin and one that I do believe they've been waiting to get done for a while now.
Yep, so she finalizes things. So you got Nikki Collin as your head coach, Tari Cummings, Tony Green, Chloe Pavlik as your assistant coaches on the bench. You'll have Sophia Young-Malcolm and Michael Mata as your assistant ADs. Young-Malcolm with player development, Mata with basketball operations. Micah Odom, director of basketball operations, or assistant director of basketball operations, and Aaron Sterniker, director of video operations. So that's the whole coaching staff there, so to speak.
Yeah, and I think everyone was talking about how this staff needs someone to recruit. So that's why I don't understand why some people are very confused by this hire. I know that that the lack of coaching a ton of basketball is a part of it. But I'm just thinking to myself, I mean, this could be a huge hire from a recruiting perspective. I don't know. I'm very intrigued by it. I think it could be a very good thing for the Lady Bears.
Well, and I think you have to understand as well that people are just so used to one type of thing that to see any sort of outside the box or different way of doing things, it's just going to take some getting used to. And, you know, for some people, there's some people that just sit back and wait to see something before really spouting off on it. And then there's people who, like, don't even give it a chance and then just rail it into the ground. And then when it turns out to be okay, like, oh, okay, never mind, my bad. Well, you just spent an entire year railing on it and didn't let it play out, you know, so that's just kind of how it goes. I'm more of a let's sit back and see how it goes kind of thing, so I don't have, like, any grand opinion. I was just, you know, kind of having to wrap my head around, or like, okay, what's the pull here? And then, okay, you realize it's more of the recruiting, social media, and all that stuff, which is, you know, just a big part of the landscape nowadays. So, yeah, on that surface, it seems to be a hell of a hire, and we'll see, you know, what happens. But Tari Cummins, Tony Green, Chloe Pavlik, that is your assistant coaching staff for Nikki Collin and her first batch of Lady Bears. So congratulations to Chloe, who I'm sure we'll talk to and meet at some point here relatively soon, and congrats to Coach Collin on getting that locked up as well. I know that's something that's been taking a little bit of a time, amount of time to get done. So now that's finalized, we can start to really focus in on basketball. All right, anything before we get to the mailbag?
You want to talk the big news for a former Baylor basketball player?
Oh, yeah. Okay, sorry. Obviously, we've got the NBA draft coming up here in the not-so-distant future, and probably should have mentioned this earlier, but oh well. It's a good way to kind of bring the news to a close, actually, on the best piece of news all week, and that was the fact that a couple of days ago, Jared Butler was announced as being cleared by the NBA draft panel that looks through, you know, potential health concerns and injuries and things of that nature. And Jared had an issue, obviously, that goes all the way back to his brief stint at Alabama that led him to becoming a Baylor Bear in the first place, was that Bama wasn't going to let him play basketball because of an underlying health condition or health issue. He came to Baylor, got checked out. Everything was fine, and they cleared him and obviously went on to win a national championship. But then that same fear reared its ugly head and, you know, this NBA draft process. And thankfully, rather than being an Isaiah Austin type of situation, this is going to be just a regular NBA draft situation. He's going to probably be a first rounder because he has been cleared fully to play in the NBA, and that's just fantastic news. I mean, it's just the best news.
Yeah, and we will preview some landing spots next week for him, but this is so cool. I mean, for him to get this opportunity, because I think a lot of people, at least that cover Baylor basketball, were at least a little concerned about what could happen to one of the greats, one of the Baylor greats, and the fact that he might not get a chance to play professional basketball. And so to see the panel clear him unanimously is huge. He needed 2 out of 3, but got the unanimous clearance, which I think is a great sign for his future as well. I know there's a lot of projections on where he could fall, where he'll go, but I continue to see it's probably going to be somewhere from 20 to the end of the first round. Somewhere in there is probably where he'll get drafted. And I'm just so excited for him. Just a great person, and you like to see good things happen to great people. And I really hope that he thrives in the NBA, and I'm just excited he's going to get a chance to do so.
Yeah, that would have been a huge bummer if he would have had to, you know, go the clearance route, or, you know, have to be withheld and then prove it for, you know, whatever the protocols would have been, whatever the process would have been. Thankfully, he didn't have to mess around with any of that, and he can just go through the rest of this last week and a half before becoming a millionaire and do so with a clear mind, which is fantastic.
Right. Like, could you imagine 21-year-old Jared Butler having to play in China in his first year? Like, the greatest Baylor basketball player potentially of all time. You don't even get to see him get a chance in the NBA. That would have been heartbreaking.
Yeah, you know, and Isaiah Austin was a great story for what that was, and a sad story at that time as well. I mean, I don't know what his NBA career would have been like, and Butler's just in a different stratosphere. Yeah, so, I mean, the Isaiah stuff, you're like, oh, man, that sucks that he didn't get a chance. But with Butler, that would have been like, oh, that's just whole nother level of awful because of, you know, just his body of work and whatnot. So, yeah, he's cleared, and you would think he'll be a first-round pick. I mean, I know you said we'll get into it, but I know a lot of Lakers fans are interested in him being their true point guard and helping LeBron out in that regard. And they would certainly be in a spot to pick him later on in that first round. But there's plenty of other teams that I'm sure will have interest. But the Lakers is one that I keep seeing kind of pop up over and over. And that could just be their, you know, fans. That could be the algorithm on my Twitter page. But we'll see.
That could potentially put both of Baylor's two best players in California. Because yeah, Davion's maybe getting a ton of hype to the Warriors. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that pick may be traded as well. But it'll be interesting. We'll definitely get into some landing spots next week because the draft is, I believe, Thursday of next week. And Davion and Jared Butler will both be drafted in the first round.
Yeah, they will. So we will have all that for you next week. We'll talk about that, maybe go through a mock draft or two from the NBA side of things. But very, very happy for Jared Butler. That's tremendous news, and just great. That's all, yeah. Just great. All right, you want to get in the mailbag here?
Let's do it.
Let's start off with Scotty B, the Baylor King. Who do y'all think will have a sneaky good season from Baylor football on offense or defense or both? Who is off the radar?
Ooh, sneaky, huh? I mean, I'm going to just keep, you know, pushing this train. I think Jalen Ellis is going to be a difference maker for this offense. I know he's not listed in the starting lineup, and that's fine, but I think he's going to have a big impact. I think his ability to be a pure deep threat is something that this offense needs, and I think he could be a great field stretcher on the offensive side. On defense, I think a hidden one is one that we actually heard a lot about over the Big 12 media days, and that's Garmin Randolph. I think he's got an opportunity to have an absolutely massive season, especially as a pass rusher. I just think they need someone like him, and they have someone like him, and now it's time for Garmin to take that step and really be a contributor for this Baylor football team.
I don't really have one on defense because I feel like I just can't really pinpoint one. Now you mentioned Garmin Randolph, and I look around, I'm like, everybody's a starter from last year, yeah, practically. So it's kind of like,
like,
I don't know,
TJ
Matt
Franklin
Jones or just name a guy. I mean, there's like 10 people you could name. So Matt Jones, I don't know. But offense, I'm going to go Drake Dabney. I think that, you know, the tight end spot's probably not going to be as fluid and as action-packed as people. Like, every time there's a coaching change and the coach brings up tight ends, like, people get this new thrill that the tight ends are going to somehow be involved, you know, and there's going to be like a Kellen Winslow Jr. type player, you know, rolling through here. And I know there's many better examples to use, but he just popped into my head as a dual threat type of tight end from back in the day who's now rotting away in jail, yeah, and is a disgusting person. Who's a kid from last year, went to the Falcons? Cal Pitts.
Yeah.
You know, that's not walking through the door anytime soon. But I do think Ben Sims could have a very solid year. And I think Dabney being a bit more athletic – and I don't know how many people are really going to be paying too much attention to him. I could see him not like week in and week out being effective, but I could see him coming up with some big plays here and there. So
yeah, I could definitely see that. I think it will be he and Ben Sims for majority of the season with some Kristoff and Henderson sprinkled in. But yeah, I like that pick. I think he could have a good year. And just to be clear, we did go a sneaky. So both Craig and I think Abram Smith will be good this year. He's not a sneaky one, just to throw that out there, because he's kind of the low-hanging fruit, I think.
Yeah, so my sneaky pick on defense is Siaki Aika. I mean, and that's why I really don't have a defensive pick, is because I don't think anybody's all that sneaky over there, unless you're going, like I said, the Matt Jones or the, you know, just random backup type players.
Someone like an Anthony Nyanwu just finds himself on the field. Yeah,
and he would be a good choice, or a Victor Obi, you know, is another one, so you can kind of go anywhere with that. But y'all go Dabney on offense. What do y'all think of the non-conference schedule for Baylor women's soccer? Though it's not against NCAA tournament teams, but against six winning record teams out of first nine games after the two exhibition games. I appreciate it in Sikkim.
Yeah, Minnesota, North Dakota State, Nebraska, SMU, Wisconsin, Oregon. I mean, it's a pretty daunting test for the soccer team. But I think that they can push through it and actually be competitive in a lot of those games. And I think it'll give them an opportunity to prove themselves early in the season. Obviously, the Big 12 is always pretty competitive in women's soccer. So I think this will be a nice test to get them ready for the Big 12 season.
Yeah, I mean, that's great to have a a schedule lined up like that. I mean, I think, you know, in the non-conference, the better teams that you can play, I'm all for that. And so it looks like they're going to, you know, get themselves pretty well and seasoned up, you know, early on, finished middle of the pack last year. And what was obviously a very strange type of year. They played like 10 games. Everybody pretty much just played about 9, 10, 11 games, if not less. So I'm sure they're all chomping at the bit to get back to it. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see Baylor soccer. Did I have the right one there? Yeah, I think so. Thought I had women's soccer pulled up. Yeah, regardless, yeah, they got a good non-conference schedule. So I do appreciate the question there, and that should be exciting for soccer fans. Let's see here. Alpha Needle, SEC is now 6 of the 14 football teams have 80% vaccination rates among players and staff, which appears to be the level considered successful. Do you know the vaccination rate for Baylor football? I have no idea.
No clue. That'd be a Mac question,
yeah,
for sure.
I have
if
no
he'd
idea.
Even answer. I don't even know if he'd answer that.
And I don't know if he would either. We can try, but I'm not guaranteeing that. When looking back at recent recruiting classes, 2018, 23 in the class, 5 no longer with the program, 11 in the 2 deep. 2019, 24 in class, 9 no longer with program, 6 in the 2 deep. 2020, 18 in class, 1 no longer with program, 10 in the 2 deep. While maybe too early, 2019 looks like a disappointing recruiting year in hindsight. What are your views on these three recruiting classes, and how do you evaluate the overall effectiveness of a particular class when looking at it historically? So
yeah, I mean, I think that 2019 right now still has some guys that I'm pretty intrigued with. I mean, Jacob Zeno could be the starting quarterback. Jalen Ellis, I think, will have a little bit of a breakout year. Matt Jones, I think, is going to end up being the Mike linebacker at some point when Dylan Doyle leaves. Will Williams made the 2 deep. He's making a run. Quaylen Jones, I still think there could be something there for Quaylen. Garmin Randolph making his move up the depth chart. I think TJ Franklin and Gabe Hall will be the starting defensive linemen. I know they're not listed right now in the first string, but I think they're going to be good players as well. Tyrone Brown, one that you mentioned at the jack position, I don't think the jury's out on him yet. So I think there's a lot of talent. Jonah White is in that class. I think he's sneaky solid as well. And Elijah Ellis could be a project that really pans out later in his career. So I don't think it's good to write off any class, really, just based on the 2 deep. I think there's a lot of factors that go into it. You'd like to see more, sure. But I think it's also what position do those guys play? Who's the talent ahead of them that they're trying to pass up on the depth chart? I think that all comes into play. Now, historically, how do I view recruiting classes as far as if they're successful or not? I think it really comes down to a matter of difference makers in my mind. How many difference makers do you have in each class? And I think that's really where you find the separation. Not how many role players did you have in the class, it's how many true difference makers. And I think the jury's still out on who are going to be the difference makers in pretty much all those classes. Obviously, Bernard, difference maker in 2017. I mean, there's guys that you can point to, but I think this year is where we really find out who in the 2018, 2019, 2020 classes, especially 18 and 19, are going to be true difference makers moving forward.
Yeah, was that Rule's last class, 2019?
Yes, it was. Yeah. Oh, well, he had a part in 2020, if you remember, because Aranda just finished that class. So I guess 2020 still counts as Rules.
Well, I mean, looking at that class, I mean, Solomon Turner transferred, PMP transferred, Davis Dyball transferred, Peyton Powell transferred, Logan Compton transferred, Niadre Zuzwa transferred.
Blake Bettier retired. Yusuf Terry transferred.
Yusuf
Sam Snyder retired.
That's just a Rule leaving thing. That's a two coaches
injuries.
Putting together a recruiting class thing. That's an injuries thing in the case of, you know, Snyder, for example. And that's just a you arrive and it's not a fit type of thing. You know, Baylor just picked up, Hal Presley. Well, Peyton Powell was on campus for a little while and he decided, hey, it's not for me. I'm going to go to Utah. Not that different from Hal Presley going to Auburn for a little bit, deciding, hey, it's not for me. Hopefully Hal Presley has a little bit of a better reputation leaving than Peyton Powell did. But, Yeah, I mean, I'm not concerned about it because I see the team they have now and what it's turned into, and it's allowed them some of these misses to go and get guys in the transfer portal like a Siaki Ika. So I think as long as you handle the replacement of it well enough, it's not that big of a deal as if this was pre-transfer portal days and you missed on a class like that. You'd be up a creek with no paddles. I mean, right. In a major way. But thankfully, with the portal, you can kind of correct some of those mistakes.
Yeah, and they missed a lot, and a lot of guys retired. But I think there's talent in this class.
Oh, there is.
I think
there's
guys that could be very, very good and are really intriguing to me this year, especially TJ Franklin and Gabe Hall. I would not write them off quite yet. I think there could be huge ceilings for both of them.
Yeah, but to Alpha Needle's point, I mean, it could be like a one out of every five recruits in this class hits out of a 24-man class.
Could be.
You know, so, yeah, you are looking at like four or five guys out of 25, 24. So that is a little bit of an issue there. Glad call. What happened to Uptempo? I missed the explanation. Uptempo's on a break. You can, I guess, ask them for more information. I have nothing to do with any of that. So that's a Drake JD – you know, Sikkim 365 thing.
Yeah, I don't really have any information, but Glad Cole did ask me if I gave any advice to JD on a proposal ring or wedding planning. I did not, but I did send JD a text. I'm really happy for him. He got engaged over, I guess, the weekend, so happy to see that work out for him. I know he's been dating his lovely fiance for a while now.
Yeah, definitely saw that as well, and I don't know what the plans are with all that, so stay tuned or ask elsewhere. That might be better served in answering, but definitely happy for JD regardless. And did see that and sent him a little tweet saying congrats and very, very happy for him. Sam Knight, thank you, Glad Call. Sam 19, are you surprised at the almost complete lack of attrition this offseason? Do you think that says a lot about Aranda and the culture that the staff is building? And do you think that recruits are taking notice? I mean, there was some thought that they'd have to lose some guys or that they would just lose some guys, period, not even need to. But that's pretty much not been the case. I mean, everything's pretty much, for the most part, stayed as is throughout this. And what do you think? Is that saying a lot about Aranda and the culture, or how do you see that?
Yeah, I think it says a lot about the culture that pretty much all the team wants to stay at Baylor and continue to play for this Baylor program. I don't think recruits are going to notice that too much. I know Baylor will probably try to push that a little bit as person over player, continuing to kind of push that theme. So maybe if they introduce that into it as a part of it, but I'm just not really sure that recruits are sitting there on their computer trying to see who transfers out of Baylor. That's so hard to keep up with, to be honest. But if Baylor pushes it, who knows? Maybe some guys find that to be really interesting and find that, hey, people like being at Baylor. So I could definitely see them using that in that regard.
Thank you, Sam, for the question. And, yeah, I think it's not so much a recruiting tool that you use. It's just they'll pick up on it when they arrive, and they'll pick up on that vibe, and we'll be able to see the culture and be able to tell, like, hey, this must be pretty healthy. These guys are all sticking around all 4 years and whatnot. Let's see, Stat Boy, will Hal Presley have any impact on Baylor this season? Thanks.
Well, Sam had one more question, just one more. How much of a snowball effect do you think landing Brown or Patton would have on future recruiting classes? Zero. Because recruits don't really care about what you did the year before. They care about what happens on the field. So if Baylor goes out and wins nine games this year, eight games this year, that's going to matter a whole lot more than Baylor adding Derek Brown and Jeremy Patton. I would almost say, actually, it probably hurts their future class if they land both of them, because therefore they have a really good player at a position that maybe they're trying to recruit in 2023. I don't really think it's very much of a positive for future recruiting classes. Obviously, they would help the football team, though, because they're very good players.
All right. Thank you, Sam. Stat Boy, will Hal Presley have any impact on Baylor this season?
Yeah, I mentioned him as a guy I'm definitely interested in watching throughout fall camp. I don't know that he'll take over a role. I think Javon Gibson kind of has the upper hand on him right now just because he was here for the spring. But I do think Hal will be a very good player for Baylor going forward. I mean, if the older guys, Tyquan Thornton especially, doesn't really step up and live up to the bill and have a rebound year from a year ago, then who knows? Maybe he gets an opportunity to come in and try to make an impact. But I think his year will be next year, along with Javon Gibson.
James Taylor, do we have any further details on losing out on Dare Rosenthal? Was it our call? Was it his? Was it the university's?
I mean, I think we've pretty much talked about this. I mean, I very much believe this was a Baylor/Baylor football team Dave Aranda call, specifically Dave Aranda call on whether they were going to take Dare Rosenthal or not. That's how I look at it. That's how I believe this whole situation unfolded. And I think the fact that they didn't offer after being coaches, you know, coaching him for a year or two and Dennis Johnson recruiting him, I think that should speak volumes.
Do you think that Nikki Collins' plan for Chloe Pavlik is to focus on NIL social media and anything they get out of her coaching-wise is gravy, or do we think that they really will put a focus on the court? The presser was ultra-focused on content. It almost felt like they will roll with Green and Cummings for on the court and let Pavlik focus on the other stuff.
I mean, based on what I've seen, I think the primary goal is that she's an elite recruiter. I think that's going to be the primary off-the-court things, but I also think she's going to be involved with the things that they try to do on the court as well, with Green, Cummings, and, of course, Nikki Collins.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a balancing act. I don't think it's going to be, like, one way more than the other. I think, probably more involved, yeah, on NIL and social media and all that, but I don't think you have a third assistant coach that you're not going to be using to coach some basketball, too. That's just – there's only those three spots, so you're going to use all three as you can to help the team win on the court, and then, you know, she'll help you win off the court hopefully as well, but I definitely think she'll be involved in some basketball. Who finishes first in the Big 12 in men's basketball, Baylor, Texas, or Kansas, and why? As good as Chris Beard is, how does he handle the talent glut in Austin? Well, shoot, I mean, the transfer portal, they've taken like 12 players in the transfer portal, so there's no talent glut in Austin anymore. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah, Texas is going to be really good next year. They have a lot of talent, but they're also going to finish third in the Big 12 because Baylor and Kansas are going to be very, very good as well. I'll go with Baylor. For now, I need to read up more on kind of the transfers that Kansas added because I know they added a few, including Remy Martin. But I'm going to go with Baylor. I think James Akinjo's addition, I think Adam Flagler's emergence, getting Matthew Meyer back, Jonathan Chamwachachu, I think, is going to take a big step in the right direction as well. And, of course, adding a guy like Kendall Brown, who could be a lottery pick next year. I think Baylor's going to be very, very good and very competitive, and I like how they match up with the rest of the teams in the Big 12.
Yeah, I'll go Kansas just for right now. And, look, I haven't deep-dived into next basketball season. I know what Texas has done, but, you know, like I said on the show yesterday, there's a difference in going the transfer route to build a championship team like Scott Drew did, where you bring in guys and they're there for like 3 years, 2 years, waiting, redshirting, doing whatever, like Davion Mitchell did, like every transfer has at Baylor pretty much. And then there's you bringing in like 6 new guys and they're all playing right away after one offseason. And that's where I could see there being an issue there for Texas as far as just having the whole total package and the cohesiveness that we saw that allowed Baylor last year to just not be a really talented team, but to be a really good team. And so can Chris Beard like fast forward and kind of hyper, you know, process all that? If he can, then yeah, they'll be right in the mix. But I'll go Kansas by default just because just Baylor loses. I know they got a lot coming in and whatnot, but they lose a lot of that heart and soul from that team last year. I just don't feel comfortable putting them right back there at number one. So by default, basically, I'll go with the team that is used to winning it in Kansas. But should be a great race. And you know that, you know, I'm sure Tech will have something to say here and there, depending on how that coaching transition goes. And
Oklahoma State. Better.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a crazy Big 12 for sure. Shy Bear, we got a few questions left here. There was some questionable play calling and decision-making by coaches last year, including Dave Aranda. Specifically for Aranda, how do you anticipate his decision-making to change going forward on fourth down, et cetera? If at all, do you see him as more conservative or aggressive?
You know, I think that, I mean, I think year one is such a learning curve, and I'm not really sure that I'm going to take a whole lot away from year one, to be honest, about kind of his decision-making and things along those lines from a year ago, because I just think the how comfortable he is right now and how comfortable he is with his staff, with Jeff Grimes and Ron Roberts, of course, leading the offensive and defensive sides of the ball, I think this year's going to be totally different. So I do think his probably decision-making will change. I think he's probably going to have you know, probably other factors that influence what he decides to do. Maybe they'll actually have a kicker that is a little bit better this year as well, or more improved from a year ago. That would help as far as going for it on fourth down and or kicking a field goal or punting. But I do think in general, I think he will be fairly aggressive with his coaching strategy. At least that's the vibe that I got from him a year ago.
Yeah, I think that's the direction I'll lean as well. I don't think they're going to be like crazy old, you know, Baylor offenses and going, you know, for on fourth and short, backed up at their 30 or something like that. But I do think he'll be a little bit of a gambler when he needs to be. And Shai said, I'll add that it looked like he had grown as a coach over the course of the year, too. I think he did, and I think he's grown a lot this offseason, for sure. Definitely was impressed with what I saw, you know, just in the few minutes we got with him over at Media Days. Thank you, Shai. And finally, Coach DeBroker, what is the offseason schedule for Baylor football up till the first game? When do players report, first practice, et cetera?
Yeah, players reported a while ago, at least to Baylor. I believe, I don't want to get this wrong, but I think it was the beginning of July, right? Am I right on that?
I think so,
I think that's when it was, when all the freshmen enrolled, rest of them who didn't
first
really enroll.
Weekend or whatever that was.
Yeah, it was either the first weekend of June or the first weekend of July. It might have been the first weekend of June. I don't know. It was one or the other. But either way, they've been on campus for a while.
Yeah.
And they've been doing their thing, lifting weights, getting themselves ready for the season. First practice for fall starts August 6th, I believe, is the confirmed date. I think Dave Aranda said that at Big 12 Media Days. And I think that's the date I've been going with for a while, the first Thursday of August. And then, of course, the first game is Labor Day weekend against Texas State in San Marcos. And that's pretty much the offseason schedule. I mean, they're going to have practice all throughout the week. They'll have media days for us where we can go out and do interviews and hopefully get to watch a little bit of practice as well. But, yeah, I think that's kind of where the schedule is currently at.
All right, so there is all the news and notes pretty much from this week. You know, got good Olympic stuff going on with a couple more former Bears adding their name to their respective countries' Olympic teams with Australia and Nigeria now in the mix for Baylor Olympic fans out there. So congratulations to Ekpe Udo and was it John Pierce from men's tennis that is going to be representing Australia. Nigeria, of course, for Udo. But joining four Americans, and we just had Will London in here. You can check out that video of him coming in and sitting down with us yesterday to talk about, you know, the journey to the Olympics and all of that. That's up on the website right now. Still a bunch of leftovers from last week and media days and plenty of stuff from there. And, yeah, just a lot to check out and a lot of discussion. A lot of people starting to kind of feel like they know their teams now, so you're seeing all this preseason discussion. A lot of fans starting to talk trash and tell other fans that their team's going to stink and – you know, all that good stuff. So, yeah, plenty of that kind of making its way over to the board as well. It was like, hey, did you see what this guy said? And on and on and on.
The offseason when everyone thinks their team's going to be 12-0, winning the national championship, then everyone realizes.
And their rival's going to be sorry and stinky,
Then they realize that Alabama, Ohio State, and Clemson are still playing this year.
Of course. So that'll be – that'll be fun to keep chopping away at and looking through, sorting through, and reading through. But, man, we're getting close. We got media days now behind us, if you think about that, and practices opening up in a little less than 2 weeks. So it's exciting times, and we've definitely got plenty to go check out over on Sikkim365.com. I want to thank Jack for producing, as always, and Grayson, anything before we go, man?
No, just really excited about fall camp. Starting up soon, NBA draft next week. That's going to be a lot of fun as well. Obviously, if you're not a Sikkim365 premium subscriber, give it a try. I promise you won't regret it. Got all kinds of news and notes. And, of course, listen to Sikkim365 radio every day from 3 to 6.
Yep, definitely do that. I will be on with Smokey and Paul later on the day from 3 until 6 on Sikkim365 Radio. So until then, appreciate you listening. This has been the Bearcast on Sikkim365 Radio.